Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Hello, everybody. It's Patrick Martins. This is the main course. It's Sunday. We're broadcasting live out of Roberta's. It won't be live if this is ever played on a repeat, but I am alone today. Katie and I have split up our shows. She wants to concentrate on policy. I want to concentrate on chefs. So the main course is probably going to be tilted a little bit more towards chef interviews, and Katie is going to be doing her show right after mine. So it's like basically Sunday morning, still on the main course from the chef and farmer perspective to the policymaking perspective. And I think that's really good for the network. So I can't wait to hear Katie's new show. I think it's called Jack. Do we know what it's called yet?
No, she's still deciding.
Something like Crunch-a-Lot or something like that. It was very funny. Well, today we are going to, in 3 or 4 minutes, bring on Yvonne de Tassigny and Chris Kachuka. And these guys are running the St. Anselm Fetissau Empire. And that's so unique. It's such a different restaurant group than any other that I know. So I'm really looking forward to having those guys on. In terms of an introduction, you know, I've always prided myself on kind of doing things a different way. And I was really saddened and kind of moved when I heard that Steve Jobs died. You know, he was a real risk taker, you know, a real doer, you know, he kind of kicked ass wherever he went. He also had tons of ups and downs. Like, he got kicked out of his own company. You know, he fought to come back. I mean, he took huge risks, like investing in Pixar. I think he bought Pixar for $10 million. I mean, that's kind of really, really cool. It's on a different field, different spectrum that I'm involved in. But I really had, you know, respect for the balls that that guy had. And I just wanted to say, you know, Steve Jobs ushered in the era of personal computers and led a cultural transformation in the way music, movies, and mobile communications were experienced in the digital age. He was only 56, and he died of pancreatic cancer. I actually learned a lot about him. He dated Joan Baez for a while. He only spent a semester in college. He dropped out of Reed College. And he said that doing LSD was one of the most important things he ever did. And he said that unless someone else also did that drug, they would never be able or even have the potential to truly understand him. So, you know, I kind of respect him. I mean, this guy really did things his own way. You know, he brought computers to the den, to the kitchen, to the bedroom. And he also didn't really rely on research groups. You know, he just did, you know, he liked it and he's like, this makes sense, let's go with it. You know, he didn't view it as the consumer's job to know what they wanted. You know, it was his job. And then this is kind of where he probably most intersects with me. He was a member of the Homebrew Computer Club, where I guess they made their own computers by hand in a garage or something. But, you know, that's pretty, you know, subversive. And he began Apple with only $1,300. So, you know, props to him. And, you know, he should have lived 30 years longer. It would have been exciting to see what else he did. In other news, Jack has engineered not just all the shows on the network, but an amazing new website for Heritage Radio Network. Really looks amazing. Congratulations, Jack.
Thanks. I'm still sad that it didn't work for Yvonne.
Yes, I know. Yvonne was like, I couldn't listen to anything. Well, we'll deal with that. But
we've got our team on it right now.
John McGill is the designer of it, and he really did a great job. So if anyone is looking, you know, he might not say yes, I don't even know, but, you know, email info@heritageradionetwork.com and ask about him. You know, and we'll shoot out your request, because, I mean, he did a great job, and he's very fair price. Finally, before we start, our No Goat Left Behind project, Aaron Fairbanks has just done an unbelievable job to sell and organize this entire goat project. There's 71 restaurants participating in this. And what's more important than just the restaurants buying goat is that, you know, dairies, in order to produce milk, a mother has to be having babies all the time. And for every male goat that's born, it's basically a financial drain on the farm. And they end up getting killed at birth or sold on to very cruel destiny in some commodity marketplace. And at the same time, we're importing so far this year about 18 million pounds of goat into the U.S. each year from New Zealand and Australia. And that's a huge disconnect, you know, that we're killing goats but also importing goats. So the fact that these 71 restaurants are... you know, supporting this project and introducing goat on the menu, and that includes Feta Sau and St. Anselm. So definitely look to our website and support those 71 restaurants. They're all over the country, but mostly in New York, and it'll be really exciting to see how the chefs tackle, you know, these kind of gangly, thin dairy goats. Did I say that on air? Hopefully they'll be very meaty, but, you know, they're not meat goats, so it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. So let's take a break, and we'll come back with Yvonne and Chris from St. Anselm and Feta Sau.
Today we'd like to send a special thank you to the Danny Meyer Restaurant Group, Union Square Cafe, Gramercy Tavern, Maialino, and Untitled. Show your support at these restaurants by ordering one of the menu items featuring goat. Goat is the most eaten protein in the entire world, yet in the U.S. we import most of our goat. Our dairy farms are forced to kill some male goats at birth because there's no market for them. Help make a change. Support No Goat Left Behind.
All right, so we are back. Yvonne, Chris, welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome to have you guys. So, Yvonne, tell us your story with you arrived to this restaurant group through Feta Sau and then moved on to open St. Anselm.
Yeah, something like that. I was actually just delivering food at first for Feta Sau, and then picked up a shift cutting meat, and picked up some more shifts, and then took over for Matt Lang, who was the original chef there, and after he took off, and worked there for about a year and a half or two.
That's like a Steve Jobs story. You went from delivering food for them to chef of now both restaurants. At different times. That's pretty amazing. How about you, Chris?
Pretty similar. I started out meat cutting a couple days a week. And then, yeah, just when Yvonne left to start up the new place, I took over.
So it's a barbecue restaurant. Let's talk about the original. Feta Sau is a bona fide barbecue restaurant. So what is its barbecue? You know, what is barbecue? What is its version of it? You know, and how is it unique in New York? I mean, let's talk about the thing that it is, because barbecue is so talked about, and yet it's hard to find good. And let's unpack the whole barbecue thing. Like, what do you do to the food when it comes in?
You know, everything we have is basically just smoked. So, as far as barbecue goes, you know, I think we do things a little different than we don't adhere to a particular type of barbecue. You know, there's St. Louis, there's
Texas,
you know,
Kansas City.
Yeah. We're just, kind of do our own thing, kind of in the, like, New York spirit, sort of.
So what is there a common grammar, though, right, of it? You slow cook things for X amount of hours in a barbecue, but you basically just came up with your own recipes for it. You didn't read any book or go to any region and say, we want to be like that?
No, it's definitely not. We're not trying to be any kind of particular region at all. I mean, Joe and Matt's dream was, to just create good, slow-cooked, smoked, you know, barbecue meat. So, and it's all dry rubbed. We don't do any sauces. We put sauce on the sides for people who want to use it, but you know, the idea is just good quality meats, that are well prepared.
And do you, the dry rub is your own secret kind of recipe of spices? I mean, is it a hot rub?
It's it's got a little bit of cayenne in there, but it's really just to, it's not to make it spicy. It's just to have, you know, to balance it out between the sweetness and the saltiness. And then there's, you know, we got espresso beans in there. From what I understand, that was Joe Carroll, the owner's. It was a recipe he had done before when he was just smoking in his backyard in Jersey, and just something he really liked. So him and Matt kind of tweaked it together and made it what it is now, you know, and I think it's an amazing rub.
Yeah, it's a very good rub. Now, have you been to these classic barbecue places in the rest of the country, and how do you think... Because, like, on some level, I'm sure they all insult New York, you know, for not being true barbecue or something. And yet, at the same time, I'm sure maybe if you were to do the top 10 barbecue restaurants in the country, 5 of them could be in, like, big cities like New York.
Right.
So, I mean, what is the state of barbecue in America? And, like, is it good in New York? Are there other places that you really just love, even though they're not your own?
Honestly, I haven't been to the South very much. Mm-hmm. I haven't really had a chance to try too much barbecue down south. I have been a little bit, so I have tried some. You know, there's been some good barbecue and some really bad barbecue. It's kind of funny. A lot of, you know, we get a lot of people from south, from Texas. They're like, I'm from Texas, and we have the best barbecue. But your barbecue, you know, they still say our barbecue is really good. And, you know, I'm sure Texas has, I know Texas has a really good barbecue, but it also has a lot of bad barbecue, you know, just like every other region.
I've had some really great barbecue in Austin recently, down Georgia, Carolinas. I've had some really killer barbecue, you know, and I think what we do is, you know, we're not trying to compete, we're just trying to do something a little different. For instance, you know, we'll do pastrami, we'll do beef tongue, we'll do classic Jewish New York food too, mm-hmm. and just kind of our own take on it, kind of put a spin on the whole barbecue formula.
That's interesting. So tongue and those kinds of... cheek, all these kind of weird things from the front of the cow. I mean, they are not things that you normally see in barbecue?
No. Not really.
Huh.
No, but we'll even do like a ribeye and serve it medium rare, which is not really a barbecue thing at all. You know, it's...
Now, what's for interesting for our listeners, I mean, your restaurant has, still sticking with Fête du Sal for now, there's no table service. I mean, there's people who pick up, obviously, if there's a mess left afterwards, but I mean, essentially, it's you stand in line. And that actually takes the same amount of time as a waiter to come and give you your stuff. So it's funny. It doesn't actually take any more time. You pick up your food, and then you go and you carve out a table somewhere in a communal dining area.
Yeah.
So what is it like running a restaurant with no front of the house? I mean, there's no hostess. There's no. It does kind of break a lot of the rules of a traditional restaurant that's so good.
Yeah, I guess in a way it's kind of more run like a deli, I guess.
Deli cafeteria style.
Makes you want to be the soup Nazi sometimes. You know?
Oh, yeah.
No meat for you.
No meat, yeah. Because you're like the head chef dealing with the public. Yeah, now, do you have, are you able to spend more on your food because you don't have to cover such a big front of the house? I mean, do you have higher food costs, you think, than other? Because I know you support Heritage Foods and other local farms and such. Is that possible? That you just spend more for the food now because,
yeah, I mean definitely the overhead is lower than most restaurants because you don't have to pay wait staff, a little bit less a headache when you're running too since it's less people you have to organize, we can focus more on the food, the way we price everything out is by the pound, and I think a lot of people don't realize too, they say it might seem expensive when you see it written on the board. They got to realize we're using natural meats, and this is the price after it's been cooked. And when you're slow cooking things for up to 12 hours, you're losing a lot of moisture and a lot of weight, so you got to make it up somehow, you know.
Interesting, yeah. And I mean, is there any cuts you cannot use?
I mean, not really. I don't think we've you've thrown some pretty interesting stuff at us, and we made it work.
Yes, it's amazing.
We do the whole hogs, break them down.
You need meat on it, right? I mean, it can't be trotters. I mean, that would be impossible, right?
I did trotters last week.
Yeah, we've done trotters before.
Interesting.
Just, I don't know, I've done them before. We can braise them in the smoker in, like, barbecue sauce. which is the only time we actually do, you know, for certain things that need, like pig's ears, we've done pig's ears, and those would just be totally dried out if we didn't have some kind of sauce with it while it was cooking, but...
Trotters, yeah. Though, I mean, that I would imagine, what is it, just break down the toughness of it 20 hours in a...
Pretty much. We do it for a few hours. It just, you know, becomes a good gelatinous, awesome mess.
Yeah, and you put everything, your smoker is a...
Southern Pride.
Southern Pride.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, like that machine itself. Could you break it down, its component parts, how much it can store, temperature, you know, all those kind of things that, you know,
it's a
barbecue geeks would be fascinated by.
It's a pretty hardcore machine. It works on a carousel system. How much is the...
What's that mean?
Basically, it has...
rotisserie on the inside.
Yeah.
So there's like a... Basically, New York City... has a lot of Clean Air Act rules, so you can't have a smoker where it's all heated by the wood and smoked by the wood. So it has to be a combination of gas and wood. So we use the gas, in a way, it actually makes it a hell of a lot easier for us because we don't have to be there, don't have to have somebody there 24/7
watching the wood
and the temperature levels in it. So we can set the temperature, and then, you know, the gas will kick in to keep it around that temperature. But, you know, if you get the right amount of wood in there, just the wood alone is enough, you know, to keep it at that temperature. But, you know, overnight, obviously, we're not loading it all night, so.
So this thing is on all the time, basically.
These days, yes.
Pretty much, yeah. maybe not for like an hour or two a day.
And why is that? Because it would take too long to get back up to the needed temperature?
No, it goes up fairly quickly, but we just smoke so much meat that it's constantly filled, basically.
Yeah. I see. So you smoke ahead of preparation, because what's its capacity?
It's about 500 pounds. If you're putting, you know, like shoulders and briskets in there, you could cram in probably around 500 pounds or so.
And does it cook evenly across, depending on where it is within the machine?
Well, no, you know, if... So each, there's four cars, I guess, per on the carousel rotisserie, and each one holds three racks. So, you know, the top rack is gonna cook a little bit faster, but, you know, there is a fan in there, so it's almost like a convection oven as well. So it helps keep an even amount of heat throughout the smoker and smoke. You know, it doesn't just sit at the top. But, you know, anything, you know, on like that middle rack is going to cook a little slower. It's not going to have as much exposure to the smoke. So, you know.
Do you have to account for that by taking everything else out, but leaving that in a bit, rotating?
Every piece of meat gets individually, you know, we check the temperature of every piece of meat, every brisket, every shoulder, make sure it's got the right temperature, the right firmness/softness, you know. Mm-hmm.
So, and, like, medium rare, someone once told me it's like you have to just feel where it is. I mean, what are you trying to cook it for? Because, I mean, nothing's medium rare in there, is it?
Well, like I said, you know, if we're going to do a piece of ribeye or even, steak, you know, we've flank, done flank steak, sirloin tip, tri-tip, those meats aren't fatty enough. So if you cook them to the, you know, 180 degrees that we do our brisket and shoulder at, it's going to just be the sole of your shoe is going to be crap. So we have to serve those medium rare.
So what do those stay in? Like, what's the average time for a piece of meat in a Southern Pride cooler? I mean, is it 24 hours, 36 hours? I mean, how does it, like shoulder and fatty cuts like that ballpark?
12 to 13, 14 hours.
For the briskets and shoulders, we cook those overnight. And then once those come out, we can start our ribs and pork belly, and
because they go in for less.
The ribs take about 5 hours, you know, the belly takes about 6 hours. We even do sausages, take about an hour.
Oh, okay, that's it for them.
Yeah.
So the person that puts it in isn't the person that takes it out.
Pretty much actually. Yeah. We got a small crew of people, and you know, they do a great job.
So how does it work? I mean, how does the shifts work? I mean, basically just you divide out amongst your crew that everything's getting done all the time, and you switch it up and change schedule as long as everything is covered.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, but we basically, you know, we have one, besides ourselves, we have one main prep cook who really does most of the cooking. You know, he comes in, you know, like Chris these days, he comes in the morning and just kind of checks all the stuff that's been cooking at night and makes sure, you know, it's doing good, mm-hmm. pulls it out when it's ready. And then a little later, our main prep cook comes and he reloads the smoker and preps all the sides and sauces and things like that. So he's there 6 days a week. His brother takes over on his day off.
Now, is it like a factory, or is there like very tight margins of error? Like, I think of a margarita pizza that just has 3 ingredients on it. Like, everything has to be so perfect, or else, you know. Now, with barbecue, what if it stays in an extra hour? What if one shoulder was particularly lean and it's too cooked? I've seen my friends at, you know, restaurants where the chef will look at every single plate and clean it and move something and add a little thing and then send it on. Like with barbecue, where you're pulling hundreds of pounds of meat out, I mean, how is that quality? I mean, are you looking for the same things that the traditional chef's looking for?
You know, there's a good amount of quality control. We want everything to be,
of course, because it's
fairly, you know, very consistent. But, you know, there is going to be a margin of minimal difference. Every piece of brisket, every piece of shoulder is going to be different. You know, we have smaller pieces, larger pieces, and you just kind of have to take that into account when pulling it out of the smoker.
And you're looking for temperature and firmness. Temperature. Those are the two clues that you use.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, a leaner piece, unfortunately, you know, sometimes you'll get a batch of brisket. I mean, that's the thing, too, with usually natural meats. They're not all pumped full of hormones, so they don't always have the exact same fat marbling and all that. So that is the main challenge is...
It dries out faster, right?
Yeah, and so, yeah, say you get, you know, for a week you're getting a batch of small, leaner briskets. It makes it very difficult, you know. A lot of times they're a lot firmer than we'd like them to be, a little tougher than they should be, but... You know, you go with what you got, and you just try to make it work and as best as you can.
Interesting. And what are your number one sellers? I mean, there's certain things you can never do without, right? St. Louis ribs and shoulder.
Brisket, pulled pork. Yeah. We have those
every day. Yeah, we like to upset people on the weekends and throw in some specials.
Yeah.
And we got a small meat case, so you know, we got to take the ribs out, and people complain, but, you know, we want people to try new things.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll do lamb. You know, we've done... lamb shanks. Well, you know, we try to play around with as many different cuts as we can. We have cheeks we get from you and whatever you
Yeah, you get you some pretty well whole goats. So, yeah. And now you can tweak the... I mean, you understand this machine. Basically, are you looking at, like, percentage of fat and leanness? So, like, let's say you do trotters and you haven't done that much. You look at the item, you guesstimate, you put it in, and you know that machine well enough. Like, in 4 hours, I should go in and check on this thing because that's probably its critical point.
Yeah, pretty much. There's when using new and kind of different stuff I haven't worked with, you know, basically it's kind of a trial and error. But you just keep checking, you know. Check your times and check your temperature and, you know.
And who repairs this thing if it breaks? I mean, have you guys just figured out every single screw and component of this thing over the years? Or do you still have to pay a guy to come and be like... I mean, not pay a guy, but they provide a guy, I'm sure.
Well, from what I understand, they used to provide a guy. Oh. And after I took over, that company had closed. Luckily, I didn't need anyone for about a year. But then I was starting to have some problems, and it was... I tried fixing everything I could by myself. You know, I replaced the fan once, but, you know, I've definitely done my fair share of repairs on that thing. Some stuff is just, it's all electronics that I can't figure out.
So it's especially still an electronic machine.
There's a little bit, you know, there's a small computer in there for the gas, mainly just to keep the gas and the temperature thermostat, you know, working, thermometer, you know, working. So, yeah, I had a hard time finding a company that knew how to work on these things, you know, and still not sure they really know what they're doing, to tell you the truth.
I know, they say you probably know more than them.
And, you know, it's also, when they installed it, they didn't leave much room between the wall and the smoker, so there's some parts are very hard to get to.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah, it's I wish I could rebuild it.
Now, is there anything that Southern Pride, because I'm sure all these, because this is a very expensive machine, I imagine, you know, like if you're opening a barbecue place, like half your cost would just be the machine or something. That's just a made up number. But It's a very serious thing. And each one probably specializes. We're super good at this, or we do this very well, or, you know, this machine specializes in that. Is there things that this machine just can't do? Like, as chefs, are you ever frustrated by a limitation of this machine? And then same question, are there certain things that it just does fantastically, or is it basically just a simple oven?
It is a simple convection smoker.
That's it.
Okay. That's, it's all you got to look at as it's a tool.
Does it keep a temperature and blah, blah, blah?
Exactly. That's the main thing, is to make sure it's not going to go cold overnight. That's
has
the main
that ever
battle.
Happened?
It has happened. Yeah. You come in the morning and
more
you
than
know, it's 90 degrees in your smoker and nothing's near finished. And you
and
gotta,
then what do you do?
You got to, you know, you raise the temperature a little bit, but that's the thing is you can't hurry barbecue.
So what do you not serve anything that night?
You get it started again, and you just have to wait it out and hope you have enough product to go through the night.
Have you ever run out of product? Because, I mean, you must go through a few hundred pounds of product a night.
Yeah.
Judging by the lines.
Yeah, we get a unusually busy night, and we've run out of. It's possible to run out.
I think you guys almost ran out of pulled pork last night.
Probably pretty close.
Jesus was telling me.
Yeah.
I gotta say, there's no sadder moment than waiting in line, looking at that sirloin on the menu, and then you're the next guy up, and it just gets crossed out.
Yeah, Jack, didn't you have
that's
like
very
a birthday
satisfying
party?
For us, though.
Yeah,
I do like to crush people's dreams from time to time.
Jack, you had your birthday party there or something, right?
I did, yeah. I had about maybe 15, maybe more people. Yeah, we somehow managed to get a table.
That's awesome. Yeah, you always had. Do you have problems with that? Like, first guy, you're way in the back of the line, and then they just go and, like, sit and be like, I'm reserving these 7 spots, but their buddy is still, like, an hour away from getting food.
I don't get involved.
Nah, that's our policy is, you know, we've had people go, oh, these people have been sitting there forever, and they're done with their drinks, and they're not leaving. And, you know, if we start to get involved, we're just going to be policing the whole thing every night, all night long. So basically,
you're leaving it like Mad Max out there, just fend for yourself. Most people are very civilized, especially in the summer when you have the outdoor seating.
Yeah, when we have the outdoor seating, it's a little easier, but most people aren't civilized, actually.
<That's so laughs>
Try this business for a while, and you find out that people want it their way. You know, everybody thinks they're at Burger King, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's take a short break, and we'll come back for a final segment and you know, talk about the restaurant group and St. Anselm and things like that.
All right.
Will somebody hear me now? Listen to what I have to say. I speak about a secret crime that happens day to day. Behind. And right before us boldly walks, he's just for the idle minds and whispers evil thoughts. He's not a thing that you can see, although he plays before our eyes. He's watching over you and me. His presence is denied. Be wary of your idle minds. Devil's waiting. He's been around since time began and strolls among our midst with ease. I've seen him turn the best of men and bring them to their knees. Ever lingers by our side and works around us, planting them in many men he'll try to hide and say he is a friend. He's not a thing that you can see, although he plays before our eyes.
All right, we're back. Jack, you're probably wondering why I'm in such a good mood today. It's because I didn't watch any of the political shows this morning.
That's good. Exercise is better than politics.
Yeah, exactly. Exercise is better than Republicans, for sure. So I'm hoping Joe is not a Republican, because Joe's a big supporter.
I have no idea.
We know I shouldn't get political. But So let's talk about the group. Just give a, it's a very weird and interesting group. I mean, I say weird, it's just so unique. So Sputin Divel was the first kind of outpost of Joe Carroll's, is that right?
Yeah, it's Spuiten Divel.
Spuiten Divel, Spuiten. Sorry. And God, all these names are just a little hard to pronounce.
Yeah, him and his wife, Kim, started that.
And that's a very interesting place. That has like hundreds of Belgian beers and all, or it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people say, oh, that Belgian bar, and that's not at all what they're trying to do. They just wanted to have, you know, beers, you know, from, yes, they do have a lot of Belgian beers, but, you know, it's they're just trying to have craft beers, I guess, since everyone's using that term for anything these days.
Well, I do think Belgian beer is probably my favorite or the best because someone once, Garrett Oliver, I think, told me this from Brooklyn Brewery. They're not the winemaking groups of the South, and they're not the all beer making traditions of the North. They're kind of right there. So they'll make a beer, but they'll still put a cork in it.
Right.
You know, it still ages. So, I mean, I think, you know, those Monk Trappist beers, I mean, are pretty delicious.
Definitely.
But essentially, it's trying to be a beer bar, but it also has other things too, right?
It's you know, it focuses on beer, but they do have wine. I think they have like 7 or 8 reds, 7 or 8 whites. You know, a few sparkling. They have some, you know, some whatever. And it's, but it's mainly it's a beer and wine liquor license anyway. So that's,
and they have food there. Do you do the food for that?
No. Well,
a little bit. Yeah. But it's, you know, they basically have meat and cheese plates, and you know, we do the tasso for them. From time to time, they have the beef tongue pastrami over there.
I was telling you, there are a lot of people at St. Anselm who got turned away because it was doing so well, who would have wished they could have gone to Sputin Divel and gotten St. Anselm food there.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that that kitchen can't deal with it.
We can't do takeout, man. It's too crazy.
It's like the biggest space, though, because that outdoor garden is huge.
Yeah.
Is it open in the winter?
I mean, it is open, but, you know.
They don't cover it or anything?
No,
or try
it's
to
not
heat
covered,
it.
Not heated. It's, you know, you're free to go out there and smoke, basically.
So how did they get access to all those beers? I mean, did they go to Belgium or meet distributors? I mean, what was their vision, to be the number one beer bar in New York? Or
I don't think they ever, I mean, you know, I can't speak for Joe and Kim. I don't think they were ever wanting, you know, aiming like, we're going to be the best beer bar in New York. I think it's kind of just a passion. I mean, Joe knows so much about alcohol, really. He knows all about beer. He knows all about whiskey. I mean, look at the selection he's got going on at Fedesal, all American or North American whiskeys.
You guys have like a one menu page. It's just all super small print of just hundreds of whiskeys, right?
Yeah.
And then all the beers next door.
And all the beer. And then at St. Anselm, we focus on wine. And I'm not a huge wine connoisseur, but from what I hear,
it's the best stuff.
It's good. He's got some really cool stuff on there. So.
So what's his thing? He just learned it on his own?
He learned it on his own. You know, he's got the palate, I guess. He knows what he likes. And seems like a lot of other people are liking it too.
Yeah, I mean, all those restaurants, everything was packed when I had dinner there last time. I mean, it was super delicious. And now, St. Anselm, what was the vision behind that? Because that, by the way, congratulations. You just got a review and stars in the New York Times.
Thank
That's
you.
Pretty hardcore.
That was amazing. That was really crazy.
You must have been really... Has Fête de Sau ever been reviewed?
Not by like, Sam Sifton or, you know...
Yeah, this is big time. So congratulations intense. On that.
Thank you.
So what was the vision of it? I mean, meats and whole animals kind of like on the grill and...
Yeah, you know, we had to redo St. Anselm's from what it was before. Just never worked out for a number of reasons we don't need to get into. So, when Joe, you know, approached me, we just kind of discussed and, yeah, like, grilling. I've always loved grilling. Barbecuing in the backyard, you know, on a grill is awesome.
And, what do you love about it? Just knowing when something's ready and perfect?
Yeah, I love that. I love just being... I like being around fire.
It's primal.
It's primal. Yeah, you know, it's... I just like being outside, and I wish we had the kitchen outside, but...
You always liked fire growing up?
Yeah, I have. But,
Should we be worried? This is a wooden
container
we're in.
Yeah, you got not some metal like around here, right?
So, was there legally the possibility of putting 20-foot of grill space outside in one of your backyards or something? I'm sure that's a legal issue.
Yeah, right? I mean, there might be a way to make that happen for sure. I don't know.
How much grill space do you have at St. Anselm?
We have 60 inches wide by about 2 feet deep.
Wow. And basically, the way, if I remember the menu correctly, you divide it up by the main animals almost, and then you have smaller portions of each of those, like two beefs that are smaller, but then you'll have like the big steak, two lambs that are smaller, and then you'll have the big saddle.
Right. We didn't want to do your classic, steakhouse stuff, like a porterhouse, and, you know, I mean, we do, you know, I'll run a special, like, I got a strip steak on special right now, but, you know, like, we wanted to do some slightly original cuts as well, you know, so we're doing a lamb saddle right now. You know, most people would maybe do a rack of lamb, but mm-hmm. we get the whole saddle. It's a London cut. We do the shoulder of lamb as well. We do a huge ribeye steak with long bone, French bone still attached. And yeah, you know, and I want to try to put as much stuff on the grill as possible. We have one dessert that's grilled. We have, we have a lot of all the vegetables.
You do the desserts? Sides. Those are your idea?
Yeah.
I like the peanut butter with the three kinds of chocolate.
That one was Joe's idea, actually. Okay. Yeah.
Simple, man. Yeah. That'll always work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. What you guys did there will always work.
Yeah.
And I'm so surprised that that doesn't just happen in more places. Like, one of my mentors was Alice Waters from Chez Panisse. And I'm always like, why don't more people just do that? Just serve the thing itself and, you know, add your finger touch to it. But, like... and so when I was at your place, Ann and I were talking, and it's like a true spirit of the Italian mom and pop osteria, you know, and it's whole prawns and a lamb saddle served family style and a bunch of simple sides like scallions and potatoes, mashed potatoes. I mean, it is the way people want to eat. And so I really recommend to all our listeners to take that L train to Lorimer and check it out, because it's simple and honest and delicious and remarkably is hard to find. I mean, that's so simple. Someone who just takes a prawn and grills it perfectly and serves it to you is like, someone's always trying to puree something near it. Right. And, you know, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we try to keep things simple and true to the ingredients that we're using.
And is that a challenge, simple grill menu? I mean, time-wise, and I mean, does that pacing it out must be hard, because you're dealing with huge pieces of meat and that vary in ounceage by a lot.
Yeah. No, yeah, it can definitely be challenging, and, time is definitely an issue we're having right now. People are thinking, you know, New York, they want everything fast, and you can't, you know, we want everything to come out fresh. You know, we don't pre-cook anything, so... You know, things take a while, and I think some people understand that, some people don't, and get a little upset. But you know, we're doing, you know,
because when they order a 28-ounce piece of meat, they gotta wait.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
That's not gonna come out.
We're not rushing it. We're not throwing it in the oven halfway through. We're doing the whole thing right there, and you know, people can see we got an open kitchen. They can see it's not like we're standing around, you know, forgetting orders and stuff. We're working hard.
Is there more waste or less waste with buying just like tons of like 20 lamb saddles of varying sizes? Like, what if no one's ordered that 30-ounce one yet? Or, you know, how does that work? How do you move product?
Well, basically we don't give people a choice.
Yeah.
You know, we have it all start out with, you know, we sell, you know, first in, first out. So if there's a couple of lamb saddles from the night before, we will make sure those are the ones that we offer first, and then we'll pull out a new batch. Mm-hmm. That way we don't risk wasting anything and have anything not be fresh.
So now that time's reviewed, has that changed anything, or that just keeps you guys the same and now you just have to turn away more people?
It's definitely helped a lot. We'd already gotten two other amazing reviews in Time Out and New York Magazine. And so we were already pretty busy, and the New York Times review, it brought a different crowd of people as well. You know, it's read by all, you know, all walks of life.
It's probably the most read newspaper in the world.
Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely, since we're not a big restaurant, we were already pretty close to capacity, I think. Mm-hmm. And we're now, so numbers wise, it hasn't changed too much.
Right.
But we're definitely getting a lot more people coming from all walks of life.
Were you just like, I don't really care what the time says, but secretly you were hitting refresh on your iMac just to see when the review would come out? Were you nervous? I mean, to update your refresh your homepage?
No, you know.
You don't strike me as the guy that could care less.
No, yeah. But you know, I was amazed that Sam Sifton would even come in.
Had you known he was in the three times or four times?
I only noticed him twice.
Oh, okay.
He sat at the counter right in front of the kitchen the first time with his family, his wife and kids, which was pretty neat. And they looked like they were having a really good time. And then afterwards he came with some friends and...
I've never actually asked this. You just send him what he orders, right? You don't send him anything else?
I mean, I felt like it would be kind of... I don't know if it's tacky or what to, you know, treat him any different. I mean, obviously, I made sure I didn't send him anything that was overdone or cooked wrong, you know. But you know, I didn't want to give him any special treatment, sure. You know. And, you know, not saying that I do send, you know, I try not to send out stuff, but
yeah.
That's wrong. But
well, we got 3 minutes left. Tell me, Chris, about your mentors and how you really got to this, because, you know, you're serving hundreds, thousands of people a week. So, I mean, tell me, how did you start? How did you get this position?
Well, I'd have to say my mentors, definitely, most definitely my dad. He's been in the...
What's his name?
Philippe. And he's been, you know, in kitchens in New Jersey, New York, since, you know, he was a kid. And he's still slogging it out. And
he's
still
working, huh?
Yep.
Still working the line?
Yep, still cool. Working the line after all these years. So, you know, it definitely is a good inspiration. I'm real thankful to grow up in a way that, you know, a lot of people didn't. I didn't grow up on like McDonald's and, you know, fast food. I got to try a lot of different things and have a real appreciation for food from a young age, and it really inspired me. And pretty much, been slogging it out since then.
He taught you technique and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
So did you never went to school?
No, I never went to culinary school.
Okay, interesting. And did you work under any great chefs before, other than your Philippe?
Not particularly.
Wow.
Just you know, started out working in like bars and kitchens, you know, kitchen bars and things like that, and just
I like it. This is a very Steve's job show. You know, you do things your own way and it can work out too. You know, you can shoot the moon, you know, you don't have to do things the traditional way.
Yep.
That's awesome. How about you, Yvonne? Is that mentors? Someone who you saw someone do something in the kitchen once or over time and said, hey, that's pretty cool.
Not really, no. I mean, my first cooking job, I was just looking for a dishwashing job. Well, that's not counting McDonald's before that. But
you worked at McDonald's?
Yeah, for almost 3 years.
I hope you gave out a bunch of free shit. You're just like, take it.
I did. Yeah, you know, I moved up to maintenance after a while, but it was nothing else where I was growing up, so...
And you grew up in France or Oregon?
When I was 6, we moved to Oregon.
Wow, Eugene, no less.
Yeah.
The eco-terrorism capital of the world, yep. Nike capital.
Mm, yeah.
You like it there?
It was, you know, it was great growing up there, but it got stuffy. So after a while, I needed to get out and be somewhere bigger, I guess.
But your family's French, right?
Yeah, we're all French.
You have brothers and sisters?
One of each.
Really?
Yeah.
They live in New York or back there?
No, I got one in, my sister lives in Santa Fe, and my brother lives in Eastern Oregon.
Nice, I love Oregon. I say, if ever I was, like, banned from New York or excommunicated, I would probably go to Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, Portland's a great city.
I like it. It's still a small town, you know, but they have tons of good restaurants there.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Great food out there, for sure.
In terms of, I've been telling everyone this, if you guys do a cookbook, you can do it. I'm sure there'll be a Fête de Sao saying in some cookbook, but to rank the terroirs in America or in the Americas 10 to 1, and I would think the Pacific Northwest would be 1 or 2. maybe two after the valley, Napa Valley or something, because it's so lush and grassy, and I love the food that comes out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, it rains all the time.
It rains all the time.
Well, thanks, guys. This is an honor. I'm happy I got, you know, recognizable names that, you know, now that I split up my show with Katie, that people were like, we don't want to be on Patrick's show anymore.
I've got one more question that my friend Jay just asked me in regards to Fete Sau.
And okay. It's,
what's the most annoying thing somebody could do online at the counter?
What's good?
Yeah, what's good? Or wait, you know.
You're waiting. You're waiting in an hour in line, and then you get to the counter, and you have no idea what you want.
Oh,
please,
man.
Please look at the chalkboard.
I am so annoyed right now. It's the equivalent of watching five Republican political shows in a row. Oh my God, people are annoying. Now, your kind of idea is that you guys are kind of right. Because you don't really interact with the customer that much, right? So, I mean, it's not like customer's always right. Cater to the customer. Like, they get what you have waiting there, right?
Right, exactly. You know, we don't... Yeah, I mean, we don't adhere to... I mean, obviously, to a certain extent, we're still in the restoration business. But, no, the customer is not always right.
We try to, you know, we want to make sure everybody has a happy, awesome experience. But... You know,
we don't put up with too much shit either.
Yeah, you know, nobody's gonna abuse my guys.
Yeah,
Kip, the manager of Roberta's, just walked in here and heard that, and he said, "Fuck that! No, that's not right." In regards to what Patrick said.
Right. Thanks for dropping the F bomb with 2 minutes into extra playing time.
I was thinking nothing really had happened yet.
Oh man! Well, as I like to say, thank God we have no listeners. Jack's like, why is he saying that? Jeez, even if it's true. Now, we do have listeners, and we appreciate it. We appreciate Hearst Ranch for, you know, sponsoring the network. And you guys, by the way, didn't you bring in that half cow once from us or something like that?
Yeah, we did.
Did that work or no?
It was tough. It was intense.
Oh, brother.
There was a lot of ground beef.
A lot of meatloaf that week.
Oh, brother. We will edit that out for the Mr. Steve Hearst. But thanks so much, guys, for coming on. It was a real honor for the first show. And best of luck. And hopefully you guys come on next season and give us updates on what you guys are doing new.
Right on.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Engineered by Jack Inslee. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. This is a public service announcement from Sea to Table and Slow Food NYC.
On October 11th, sustainable seafood distributor Sea to Table will join Slow Food New York City to host an event celebrating the bounty of local New York seafood. The event, Slow You, Sustainable Sashimi, will feature a tasting of 4 fish species from local Montauk waters. The event will take place on Tuesday, October 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Institute of Culinary Education, 50 West 23rd Street in Manhattan. Tickets are $25 for Slow Food members, $35 for non-members. Visit slowfoodnyc.org for more information about this event and how to get tickets.
This is a public service announcement from American Meat Documentary.
American Meat, a new documentary that chronicles America's grassroots revolution in sustainable meat production, is going to screen at Movie House at Third Ward in Williamsburg on Sunday, October 9th, in partnership with Local Food at 7, and the film will be at 8. There will be a panel discussion afterwards with Stacey Murphy of BK Farmyards, filmmakers Graham Merriweather and Mimo Salazar, and other food producers and advocates. That's Sunday. At 7 p.m., show up for Local Food, At 8 p.m., the film screens. At 9:30 p.m., the panel discussion. The suggested donation is $10, and the address is 3rd Ward at 195 Morgan Avenue.
The Heritage Meat Shop has just opened in the Essex Street Market. Open from 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 6 on Sundays, the Heritage Meat Shop supports independent family farms and animal welfare approved and certified humane raising standards. Most importantly, they offer a wide variety of heritage breeds. So stop by, get a sandwich, try the charcuterie. The Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market.